You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dolph fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt and the toughest podcaster that Dan Marino ever played with, OJ McDuffie. Juice, are you ready for a fun one today?
You know I am, Big Seth, man. This is going to be a lot of fun, man. It's always good to get these guys that I always watched and you know, admired on the football field, man. But also, you know, as a fan myself, you know what I mean, was out there cheering for, man. So this is going to be a fun one, bro.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Without further ado, John Denny dives back into the fish tank all the way from Utah, our second guy in like the last month that we've had from Utah. John, how you feeling, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
How about he's good, Big Seth. Look how good he looks, man.
He looks like he's running.
I feel like I'm underdressed.
I feel like he's good. He's like got this big corporate thing, you know, like we're with
this is a jacket. I got a dry fit shirt on. Just came from the gym, so this is deceiving.
Right, it's kind of a Phil Knight thing. Like you,
it's the dark black jacket. It looks like a suit or something, but it's just a
right.
It's not. Right. It's just a little. It's getting cold here. We're down in the 40s now, so
I'll put a jacket on.
I thought that was t-shirt weather in Utah.
It was last week, but winter's coming.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Juice, we got a lot to get into with a career that's as rich and as long as John's was. But before we get too deep into the tank with all of that, I want to cover two things. I just want to get these two things out of the way. And the first is, and we were talking a little bit about it before we got this thing started, John, but this is actually your second appearance on the Fish Tank. You made history on this show because when we started, before they would let us in the building, that we had to get retired guys. We had to pull Tony Eguis, onto the show. We had to drag in the reporters and everybody else. We couldn't get active guys. And we did a training camp special in 2019 with a few guys, and you were the first on deck. You actually made a joke about it that like they didn't want to put anybody that could be dangerous on as the first active guy on this show, so they went with the safe bet. Unfortunately, it was indeed your 15th and final training camp, so I don't know if you're holding us accountable for any of that.
No.
I was kind of waiting a few years to see if you would even come back on.
No, not at all. I was on borrowed time as it was, man. I was stealing, and I finally got caught, and my time was up.
Well, you were doing anything but stealing.
I know that's right.
A lot about that. Yeah, shame on you for saying that.
I'm the one that stole, John. I'm going to tell you that right now. My last year and a half, man, I didn't touch the field. You didn't steal a damn thing, bro.
You touched the field, like just outside of
Yeah. Warm-ups. I was playing catch with some of the guys.
Yeah, no doubt. And so the second thing that I do want to discuss is that it totally the opposite of stealing. Juice, I'm taking a stance today. It is my opinion that there is no player ever, other than the great Dan Marino, there is no player ever in the history of the Miami Dolphins who is more Miami Dolphin than John Denny. I'm saying not Larry Zonka, not Bob Greasy, not my own boss, Jason Taylor. I hope he doesn't listen to this. Well, I do want him to listen to the episode, but hopefully he doesn't get mad at me. Not even you, OJ McDuffie.
Here we go.
Dolphin of Dolphins that isn't named Dan Marino is right here in the fish tank with us. It's John Denny, and we're going to talk about why. But that's how I feel, John.
Wow, that's an honor. That sounds like a little bit of a stretch. You go survey the general population, and my name's not going to be the first one that comes to mind. Or second.
I didn't say first one to come to mind or most popular. I'm just saying the most dolphin of dolphins.
That's right.
We'll talk about why.
Well, you know, tell us how you really feel.
That's
Big
how
Seth.
I feel.
I can tell, man. And I can't wait to hear more about, you know, your theory, Big Seth. But before we get too excited, John, can we learn a little bit about you, John, before you became a dolphin? I mean, you grew up in Thornton, Colorado. Is that just outside of Denver?
Yeah, it's just north.
Just north of Denver. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Standout career at Thornton High, Horizon High. You're recruited by a handful of schools, but you choose to enroll in what's then called Ricks College. Can you explain Ricks College to me?
It's a junior college, or it doesn't even exist now. They've changed to BYU Idaho, and they got rid of their sports programs. But as far as an opportunity to play, there was Shattern State, Nebraska was offering a scholarship, and Ricks College came in late and they offered a scholarship. And so I ended up going to Ricks, but I was playing offensive line in high school. I was a bigger body. You know, I was 6'4", 240, and they needed a guy to fill a spot on the offensive line. So I was playing offensive line, and I didn't like it. Like, I wanted to play defense. I was a, you know, more defensive-minded guy. And so they wouldn't let anybody go two ways. And so I couldn't play defense, and I kept asking the coach, you know, I want to play some defense. After every game, it was like, you know, just let me go two ways. And so it was frustrating, but I played offensive line. Wasn't my passion, but did good enough, you know, to get an offer to a couple small colleges, and ended up going to Ricks, where, you know, my first year there, I was five deep on the offensive line, and they didn't have enough guys to run scout D. And so they're like, hey, does anybody want to play scout D? And I was like, I'd rather play scout D than string offensive line. So things went well enough. After one season with them, I got offered to BYU and transferred to BYU.
Was BYU, now that it's called Brigham Young University of Idaho, was it like a, I don't want to say like a farm system there, but I mean, what were the two schools affiliated even at that time?
Yeah. Yeah. They're both church owned schools, the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints. And so, yeah, they just turned into a university, BYU Idaho, and the major sports programs, you know, the junior college sports programs. We were playing smaller colleges in Arizona and in Utah. But yeah, there was a lot of guys that fed from Ricks College into BYU.
Seth, I played at BYU one time, and we played a game in Provo, and man, it was rough, man. I mean, I couldn't breathe. They kicked our butt first and foremost.
Really?
You know, I couldn't breathe up there. You know, I mean, Penn State, we struggled up there, man. And so, and we acted, you know, it's one of those rare times you stay an extra night. We traveled so far, we stayed overnight Saturday. I just wanted to get home, man. Our tails between our legs, man. Couldn't breathe still, you know. So, yeah, it was rough playing at BYU.
Who was on BYU that they whooped you like that? What was their squad?
We lost to Ty Detmer, and we beat Ty Detmer.
Okay.
But I think right before, I don't know if Ty, because we played a home and home, and we also played them in a bowl game. So we played BYU three times when I was at Penn State.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And we won two out of three, but the one up there, boy, ooh, it was rough.
Yeah, that altitude will get to you. It's like playing in Denver, man. You know, that mile high.
Exactly.
You were
right.
Ready for it. You were ready for it, it sounds like, John. So I want to go back to this idea that you were playing O-line and you didn't like it. Your older brother, Ryan, was, you know, and we're going to talk about him a little bit, but he was certainly a defensive lineman. Why did you know that you wanted to get on the defensive side of the ball? Was it just you didn't like the position, or was there something about playing defense that was of interest to you?
No, that's where I started. I started at linebacker in, what was that, ninth grade. And then I started to develop more. I was getting bigger. So I moved to defensive line. And then just my senior year in high school, it was a coaching decision. It was, you know, personnel. They just needed guys to, you know, they didn't want guys to go in two ways. They wanted guys fresh. And that was just where I ended up.
Yeah, it sounds like it really left an impression on you. Still fired up about it. No doubt.
I didn't hate it. I mean, I still love playing football, but it was not like, that wasn't the reason I got into it. And neither was long snapping, to be honest. I mean, that wasn't, no one goes out to the field with their boys after school and says, I want to be the long snapper, you know, give me the football.
I think they do now. I almost think they do. I definitely want to talk about that. But so when you do get to BYU, your brother had a great career there. Did you guys cross over at all, or was he gone your first year at BYU?
No, we did. We crossed over one year. And then I also had the opportunity to cross over with my little brother.
Oh, wow.
So we had this long stretch there where my parents were going to BYU football games for over a decade.
Yeah, they should have just keep giving you guys the same number so your parents didn't have to get multiple jerseys. They could just have these Denny jerseys. That's pretty cool, man. So, so Ryan.
Well, Seth, how could they do that, Seth, when they crossed over?
Well, you know, they give you everybody the same damn number at
some of these universities.
I see these guys now.
You're right.
The kick returners, they put one jersey on and then they catch the punt and then they take the jersey off. And I don't understand what the heck's going on over there. That's a whole other story. So, so you get to BYU. Ryan, I guess he's the big dog on campus at that point. He's a second round pick by the Bills. And you kind of pick up right where he left off. You have 29 starts for a guy who couldn't even get on, you know, defensive side of the ball his senior year. Obviously, coach's decision, not because of talent. But you start 29 games in 3 years, you rack up some sacks, you're All Mountain West selection multiple times. At what point you just brought it up. No one goes out there to be a long snapper. At what point does long snapping become part of the equation? Like, was it part of the equation in college? Was your goal to be an NFL player on the defensive side of the ball? Or did you say, hey, I think long snapping is the route?
Now, my number one goal is to try to make it as a defensive player. But to answer your question, it goes all the way back to Westlake Junior High, my first year of football. They were trying to see if they had enough guys because we had a soccer player who could kick a ball, and you know, they wanted to try to put together an operation to see if we could even, in a situation where we needed to get just 1 point, do we even have that option? Because a lot of times you just go for two at that level of football. So they had a tire hanging from the uprights, and whoever wanted to lined up and gave it their shot at trying to hit this tire. And
I love it.
I hit the tire. I didn't lace it through the middle of the tire, but I hit the tire at the top of the tire where the chain was holding it. And it knocked the chain off, and the tire fell. You know, everyone whipped into a frenzy, and oh, you knocked the tire off. And it was like, so that was the catalyst. I was like, oh, maybe I'll try this thing, you know, snapping. And so I started snapping way back then, and I was always kind of like a side gig. I could always do it. I was learning how to do it. When I got to high school, the senior had just graduated. They needed a snapper, and I was like, I can kind of snap. And so it was like, I can kind of do it. And by kind of doing it all the time, I got a little better at it, and I was always coming into a position where the current snapper was leaving. Same thing happened when I got to BYU. Their guy graduated. I was redshirting, so I wasn't playing my first year. And he graduated, and I stepped onto the scene, and they needed a guy to fill this spot. And back then, kind of like you guys mentioned, it's changed today. There's, you know, snapping camps. There's kids growing up kind of looking for this. You know, they're going to these camps. That's all they've ever done. They're trying to make it as a snapper. But it was, you know, I was kind of the last of a dying breed where – it was a position player who could snap. So I always filled that position. So it was towards the end of my senior year at BYU that my special teams coach was like, you know, you're pretty good. You got the size, you got the frame. You don't work at it a ton, and it's good. Like, if you even put in more, you know, effort and time into this, you can make it at the professional level. So that's where I ended up.
A natural gift, Juice. A natural gift to knock a damn tire off the chain.
blind luck, divine intervention. I don't know what you want to call it, but it was,
So, John, was that because of the accuracy or because of the velocity that knocked that thing off?
It had to be both.
No, it's just
a combination of the two.
It was, I don't have film on it, but I'm sure it was an ugly ball that just happened to catch the little carabiner right on the chain and knocked it off. I mean,
John, you gotta step into our world as a podcaster here, and I don't know that that's on your long list of things you got to accomplish here in life, but we got to pump that story up a little bit more. Like, you snapped that thing, the tire went flying back. Yeah,
you got to put it in slow motion. It's got to be
the chosen one, man. You are the chosen one as well.
So, John, so you traveled from Provo, Utah to South Florida to be part of Nick Saban's first training camp. But while you were undrafted, you joined a class of rookies, probably second to none, really, which included Ronnie Brown, Matt Ross, the all-time leader in Fish Tank appearances, and Channing Crowder. Yeah, Ronnie. You know, Ronnie's a laid-back kind of dude, but we have to know, what was it like to be a part of the same rookie class with Crowder and Matt Ross? And that had to be very interesting.
Oh, no, it definitely was you know, I was able to be that fly on the wall for a lot of entertaining conversations and interactions between those guys. My memory stinks, but there's a few stories that do stick out, and I don't know if they're allowed to be told in public, you know.
If you want to tell them, we can accept them.
You guys got to get Matt Ross. I don't know if you've had him. You got to get Matt on the podcast.
We have been trying to find Matt Ross. There have been no more popular stories ever told on this podcast than anything Matt Ross related, whether it was Channing telling some stories, Jeff Darlington told a couple Matt Ross stories. I think Ronnie Holiday talked about the one. Remember, he ate the lizard off his shoulder?
Yeah.
Wait, so that's true. You were there for that one too?
Yeah, no, I wasn't there when he consumed the lizard, but I was there for the aftermath, yeah.
John, were there any stories they were telling where you felt uncomfortable and just wanted to walk away and just let them finish doing what the hell they were doing?
Oh, yeah, many times. I mean, you just shake your head and disbelief and mind your business and keep on. I crossed paths. I saw Matt a couple years ago at Random in the airport. We were I think spring break, taking our families on separate vacations, and we just kind of a double take, but because it's been, 20 years.
Forever.
Yeah.
He, I did speak with him, and I think I caught him, like, it was one of those unknown answers. You know how you get those calls, you don't recognize the number, and typically you let him go to voicemail, but for whatever reason, he took a shot on it, and it was me, and he's like, oh, hey, Seth. He called me Zeth, him and Mike Westhoff. Hey, Zeth. But, and how you doing? We were catching up, and I said, oh, man, you're like the most popular guy that nobody knows on the fish tank. They all hear the stories. And he goes, yeah, you know, I'd like to come on. Let me get back to you. And he hasn't returned a single call since.
Ghosted. So
he's gone
ghosted.
Underground.
I was going to say, he'd be like Channing. He'd be one of your repeats. I think he'd have a lot of guys want to hear more of his stories and requesting him to come back.
Too fun. But it does kind of, like Juice, you and I were talking about, it kind of leads us to maybe a bigger picture question about all that.
Yeah, it really does, man. I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but, you know, with your faith in these guys, I mean, was there any conflict for you with these guys? I mean, I know they're your teammates, and I know I had teammates that I was okay with, but not all. I mean, we got 53, 58, 63 people in the locker room. Sometimes, you know, guys just go a little bit over the top. Was there any conflict for you?
Nah, I mean, I got thick skin, and I'd been around, you know, enough locker rooms and enough banter. That and I know never took anything personal, and it was all in good fun.
Well, and we're going to get to him in a minute here, but obviously we make some calls, just like I called you about, Jay Feely. and so I had to call Brandon Fields, and we're going to talk about Brandon a lot, but I called Brandon and he mentioned, he said, you know, John really was like, he was steadfast in his beliefs, and he lives his life the way he lives his life. But he still was one of the guys. He wasn't ever afraid to come out with us. He didn't necessarily enjoy himself in the way that we enjoyed ourselves. He had found a different way to enjoy that moment. But we never felt like he didn't come hang out. He didn't fit in. So, you know, I thought that was really kind of interesting how he said you might have even, and I have played this role many a times, you might have even had to drive a guy home or two that that perhaps, you know, had a one or two cocktails too many. And I just always find that remarkable because a locker room has so many different personalities in it. And again, you got a bunch of young guys who have this unique position, making good money and playing a sport that requires you to be a little bit different, just wired a little bit differently to play this sport. And so you do get some wild dudes, and then you have some folks that, that carry themselves a different way and have a different path in their life. And so not necessarily taking anything personally, but I always do wonder, like, how much you're able to separate, hey, this is my job, these are some fun guys. Outside of these walls, they maybe live life differently than me, but inside of these walls, we can collectively kind of share a mission and have a good time.
No, yeah. I mean, we all have different beliefs, and I mean, that doesn't mean we still can't, you know, enjoy each other's company. And I became really good friends with all the guys I played with, you know, specifically in the special teams room between, you know, my wife and their wives and girlfriends. And yeah, we'd go out all the time, and, you know, I didn't drink, so I wasn't partaking in any of the alcohol, but that didn't mean you couldn't go out and enjoy each other's company, you know, and get to know each other's families and, you know, make memories.
And I bet there's a lot of memories. And so we're going to, you know, you said your memory's terrible, but I'm going to go back to that first year, going back to that 2005 year there. And when you were on the show previously, because it was our training camp special, we were talking about that, and you reflected back to your first ever training camp, your first ever preseason game, which was at the Hall of Fame game in Chicago. Not in Chicago, in Canton, but a Hall of Fame game against Chicago. And obviously the reason the Dolphins were playing there that particular year is because one day before that game, Dan Marino was enshrined in Canton, his forever football home, right? So that was Danny's year that he goes in. And I know you had said how you were just so nervous. Here you are, you're a free agent, and, you know, you're trying to make the team as a long snapper. The guy who you're competing with, Ed Perry, had been there, I think, 7 or 8 years beforehand. And I remember you talking about how nervous you were. But I'm going to go back to what I said at the top of this show and proclaiming you the second most Miami Dolphin of Miami Dolphins after Dan Marino, because I think this is pretty cool. Here you are, first time you've ever been on an NFL field outside of practice. Preseason game, you're in Canton, Ohio, football heaven, and Dan Marino has just been enshrined. Dan Marino, 42 times he suited up in a Miami Dolphins uniform. 242 times.
Yeah, about Dan, to say.
Yeah,
damn.
42. Yeah. No, 242 times he suits up in orange and aqua, puts on those awesome uniforms. John, you end up doing it 224 times. You play in 224 games. The only person who played more games as a Miami Dolphin than you is Dan Marino. Is there any way in the world that in that moment, as a nervous rookie in your first game on that field, that cool, was it Fawcett Stadium, I think they called it at that point in time? It had the little hill on the one side. People would sit in there. It was a high school stadium. Is there any way that you're sitting there and, like, are you aware at all that just Dan Marino going in, are you even thinking about the Hall of Fame? And there can't be any way in the world that you're thinking about the fact that you're going to play in 224 games after that.
No, you're thinking, I'm trying to make this team. Like, I'm trying to play defense, but I'm obviously, you got Jason Taylor, you got Vonnie Holiday, Kevin Carter, Keith Traylor. It's like, you got this amazing line. So then you're starting to figure out, okay, well, you know, can I get a backup job? Can I maybe just make, you know, practice squad, get my foot in the door? You know, maybe the snapping thing will work out. So you're just thinking, like, what can I do? Like, the more I can do, I want to try and make the team. You know, that's, you're not thinking I'm going to play a couple hundred games for these guys. No way.
I think it's remarkable. It's remarkable in and of itself, right? Just in general, it's incredible. But the fact that and I didn't think about this, but that your first ever game was when this guy, Dan Marino, is going into the Hall of Fame. And and it's the only other person to even play 200 games for the Dolphins was JT. And then after that, it's everybody's under 200. So it's just fascinating to me that you're able to do it. But you just said you're still trying to play defense there. So when you come into camp, did they say to you, hey, we're going to give you a shot at D-line, but we really want to focus on, like what was the conversation and how did that long snapping piece come in? Because, you know, we see now long snappers, Blake Ferguson got drafted. You know, you see some of that happen every now and then. How much, I guess, wrestling between wanting to play D-line versus what were they telling you when they signed you?
No, it was both. I was having a chance at both. You know, I was with the defensive line. I was in meetings. I was in drills. They were giving me a couple reps in practice. But throughout the whole time, they would pull me out aside and, you know, have me go take some snaps with the punters and the kickers. And first preseason game, they said, hey, we're going to give you a couple punts. Maybe at the end of the game, depending on the situation, we'll give you a couple reps. And then the second preseason game was like, hey, we're going to give you a couple more. And then it slowly gravitated, you know, towards more reps at snapping. And, you know, obviously I'm a better long snapper than I am a defensive end. And in hindsight,
we don't know.
Who knows though?
We'll never find out, right?
We will never find out. Yeah, who really knows? Well, we know you're a pretty damn good long snapper, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I had I'd go out to defensive line dinners, and I remember my rookie year going to one of those with them, and my very first dinner, and they told us all to, you know, throw your card in the hat for credit card roulette.
Oh, they played the roulette
for dinner, and I remember thinking at first, I was like, no way, like, I can't afford this. And I was like, actually, like, my credit card's got like an $800 credit limit on it. I just came from college. I mean, right, like, what? Right. Even if it does get picked, it's not going to get cleared.
You're good.
I mean, but luckily, my mine got, you know, pulled out earlier, so I didn't have to face that. But
who ended up with the bill? I got to know.
Oh, I can't recall.
Yeah. You just knew it wasn't you. That's
all I cared about.
All right, John, as much as Seth and I, we try to get a little dramatic with some of the things we do, man. I think he's spot on. You know, your place in history just in terms of service is remarkable. You know, I know firsthand how hard it is to play in this league. And then you talk about 224 games. That's absolutely ridiculous, no matter what position you're in. And I'm sure some people say, well, yeah, of course, we expect that. I mean, he's a long snapper.
Yeah, I've heard you say that, actually, Juice.
No, you did.
Yes, I did.
You did, John. Oh, I love it. I love it. Tell us more.
I did a little homework. I was when I'm coming onto the show, I went back and I was looking at I listened to some of the interviews you guys did with some of the guys I played with. And I was listening to you talk with Kevin Carter because he's got 224 games under his belt. And you said, but that's different. That's not like you're a kicker or a long snapper. That's.
I didn't say you though. I didn't say you though.
I'm not. You know what? I'm not taking any offense. I'll be the first guy to tell you that the nature of this position allows for some longevity. So I'm not salty about it.
You know, I think once again, John, I think my partner Seth set me up again, man.
No, this one, John earned that.
That was
on his
good
own.
Though, bro. You were. Oh, I did. I, you know, if memory serves me right, which I don't have a good memory, like you said. I mean, I might have said that. I don't know. I got to look back, do some research.
But it's the truth.
I'm just glad
it's
it was
truth.
You and not me.
It's the truth.
He said, hey, Seth, he caught me quick. I didn't get a chance to finish it. He caught me like, oh, boom, Juice. Right, I got you. I've been waiting on this moment, Juice.
No, it is. It is different, though. I mean, a guy like Kevin Carter, where you're on the D-line, you're in the trenches, banging your head against other guys every down for 224 games. It is different. It is physiologically completely different. So, I mean, the facts are the facts.
Yeah, but you didn't miss one either, though, man. That's hard to do. I mean, but look at that list, though. I mean, we go seven. The Dolphins go like 17 deep in this record book, John, as you know. And on this list, they have 5 offensive linemen, 3 quarterbacks, 2 D linemen, 3 pass catchers, a linebacker, 1 kicker, and only you as the long snapper. So, I mean, no matter what, we see how anytime, you know, you see guys. I think there was a running back or something kicking the other day. You know,
I did
you
see got, that for Houston.
Yeah, there's some it always happens. And you know, John, how we always have emergency field goal kickers, emergency snappers that we work with to see who's going to be. And you never gave up your position for anybody. Thank goodness, because it could have been disastrous for some other guys being out there.
Nah, there's a lot that comes into play that you can't control. You know, I got lucky. You know, I had to be good enough to get my foot in the door. But there's so many things. There's other variables. You know, the guys you're playing with, you know, your kicker, your punter. You know, if they're playing well, no one's going to care. No one's looking at the long snapper. You know, your special teams coach. I had a couple good special teams coaches. It was Darren Rizzi for a long time. And he was always posting, you know, top 5 units in the league every year. And then, you know, surround myself with kickers and punters that are going to the Pro Bowl. That's really going to help me, you know, stay in the position like I did.
And that's a great point right there, because you think about, I mean, we talk about your 224 games, but they're consecutive as well, which is, as you know, it's hard to do. And I always talk about the best ability is availability, and you're always there. But you have to think that, you know, if you got these guys that are going to Pro Bowls, I mean, you're the one that gets it started. You're the one that gets the party started from the snap, from the beginning. Right. So, I mean, some of these guys, a bad snap can lead to a tough hold, lead to a bad kick, which means most, if you do that a lot, you probably won't be in the league, but these guys won't be going to Pro Bowls.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky. Yeah, it started with me, so I didn't have to rely on anybody else to do my job. So the kicker, you know, he's got 2 other guys that execute their job before they can get their foot on the ball, so...
So I'm saying, give yourself a little credit here.
Yeah, John. He doesn't. And I'm gonna take it a step further. John, when you, as a long snapper, you're like, look, a wide receiver and quarterback footballs are nice and taken care of and done, you know, done up. You guys, your ball's got like, what, an hour to get prepped? And you got all these different climates you have to deal with. The heat down here, the freezing cold up in Buffalo. That ball's like a brick. I hated catching it as a punt returner. So as a long snapper, that's kind of like, you know, asking a quarterback to throw a kicking ball, which they probably can't do. But for you, I mean, that's a special talent in itself.
Now, you had to get used to it. There was definitely, you know, it was tackier in the humidity. Yeah, you got, you know, naturally you had a better grip. But you get to those drier, colder climates like up in Buffalo, and, you know, you had to figure out how to get a good grip on the ball. The worst was, the hands down, the worst ball you could possibly get was one that was – it's a brand new ball broken in, but it starts to rain, not where they get waterlogged and like soaking wet, because those you can still get a little bit of grip on, but they had that, you know, that waxy film on them. Even though when they break them down, they get that, they're shiny. If you look on, you know, TV, you can see they're kind of glossy. And so just that little misty, like just a little bit of rain on a fresh ball was like a watermelon seed. It was the worst.
Oh man.
I mean, I can only imagine that. And then also like the technique now, and I know you probably are doing this as well, whereas you can actually – do you do the rev rates where the ball's already pretty much laces out once the time it gets to the holder?
Yeah, you figure out with your grip, you know, with your natural snap where your ball is going to group basically, and then you just adjust your grip. You know, you can rotate the laces in your hand. You don't have to necessarily snap the ball with the laces in your fingertips. So if you're a quarter turn off, you can change your snap. You can work on your, you know, your follow through. You can work on speed, and that'll help change your rotations. But once you kind of settle down into a comfortable snap, you can just rotate the ball in your hands before you snap it, so that the holder's catching them. The lace is right there in his fingertips. So when he puts it down, it's lined up.
That's science, man.
There's also this too, Big Seth. And we talked about the 224 games. They were consecutive, 14 straight years. John, were you ever close to missing a game?
My last season, I want to say, what was the longest game in NFL history? It was our first game. I think it was 2018, maybe. Oh, we had a rain delay. And
right.
Game started at 1 o'clock and like ended at 8 o'clock. But first game of the season, and I covering down on a kick, guy tried to come in and blindside me. And I caught him, you know, last second, dropped my shoulder, but I got a third degree separation on my shoulder. And I want to say like the first punt of the game. So I go in and they're looking at it, and it still functions. It was my left shoulder, so it wasn't my dominant hand. So I could still snap. So I'm in the locker room for however long those delays were, trying to keep it warm, right, snapping balls. And so once that game was over, you know, the next day it seemed bleak. Like I woke up and you can't even raise your arm and go into the training room, and they start doing a rehab, and they bring in, you know, the snapper from camp just to have on hand. And so that whole week I don't snap at all. And then it wasn't until Saturday walkthrough, I went out and, you know, taped it up and kind of gave it a shot, and I could still snap. It wasn't great, but I could still snap. And it was good enough that, you know, Riz trusted me to handle my business in the game. And it's just, the thing was not, you didn't want the other teams to know that you were like, like, if you hit me right here, like after I'm done, as soon as I snap the ball, if everyone just runs up and hits me on my shoulder, it'd be game over. But
wow. So is, when you're in a situation like that, John, especially at that stage of your career, if that's your, you know, 2018, you're in your 14th season, are you thinking about the games played streak at that point? Are you concerned that if you can't play, is it simply about, okay, I can't be out there for the game and I want to be there? Or do you start to think about your football mortality at that point?
Yeah.
You start to say, man, if I miss one, they're going to bring someone in and I may never play.
That's more what you're not thinking about. The streak is kind of secondary. That's just a byproduct of playing. But the first thing you're thinking is, if I'm not playing, they're bringing another guy in. And as soon as another guy gets in here, he's putting, you know, film out there that he can snap. And, you know, I'm already on borrowed time. I'm in my 40s. Yeah. It's like, you can't give them a single reason to want to get rid of you. And so that's the first thing you're thinking is, I got to stay on the field to keep my job.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt, man.
Right.
Man.
Even 14 years into it. That's wild. Well, I mentioned earlier that we spoke with Brandon Fields talking about, you know, you talked about the holder and all the guys, how fortunate you were. You guys were together for a long time, better part of 8 seasons. It was cool. He talked about you being almost like a big brother to him. He actually said, maybe a little strange, but he said he essentially spent his whole career staring at your ass, which if somebody was listening to this now and they didn't necessarily know football, that might feel a little bit awkward, but we understand what he meant by that.
We get it.
Yeah. as a punter and as a holder. But one of the things that, and this speaks to the longevity, he mentioned that right away he noticed, he's like, John Denny was a fitness nut. And it's fun. I love that you're wearing your, you said you went out for the run and you got the drive.
Still getting it in.
But he said you were a fitness nut and that it was really good for him because you pushed him in ways that helped him, stay in shape that maybe he needed. And he said you guys had all these little competitions. He goes, I know you've been to camp and saw us running up and down the field, throwing the ball back and forth to each other. He said you guys had cardio competitions and that you go into the weight room and had all these different cardio competitions to stay in shape. What do you remember from those days? Were you always that kind of a guy? Like, were you always a workout nut?
No.
Or was there a point in your career where you said, okay, I can make some changes to my life to extend this?
No, there was definitely, it was a progression. Like when you're younger, you get away with everything. You eat whatever you want and your body's more resilient. And as I started to, you know, get older and the aches and pains kind of linger a little longer and you start looking into, how you can kind of manage these things. And it was actually the lockout year when we were spending, you know, the off season, you're basically on your own with your own program. And I started looking into nutrition and really changed my diet. So that's where that started. So I changed my diet. I've always been, you know, a fan of working out. My dad grew up, I watched him, you know, wake up every morning at 6 o'clock and go to the gym. So that was kind of like ingrained in me, just a daily workout of some sort. But, it progressed. So that was probably what was that 2010? Was that the lockout year?
So that's so,
but that's also, I mean, it's also when Brandon was coming on to the scene. And so, yeah, it was, you want to keep your job. And so you didn't want to leave any stone unturned and you didn't want to have any regrets, you know, be like, I got cut. And maybe if I'd have worked out harder, maybe if I'd have trained a little harder, maybe if I'd have ate a little cleaner, or, you know, you didn't want to have any of that. So in my mind, it was like, this was the greatest gig in the world, you know, dream playing in the NFL. So I was going to do everything I could to keep that as long as I could. And then once it was over, you know, I can hang my hat up and be proud of that, the effort I put into it.
It looks like it was 2011, by the way, the lockout.
2011 was lockout. Yeah. Well, tell you what, man, you're a better man than me, man, because my workouts, you're still working out. My workout stopped the last time John Gamble told me I didn't have to run anything. So that was it. I was so tired of working out, man. I try to bike every once in a while now, John, but that's about it, man. You know, that's about it.
No, it's whatever you'll do. I mean, whatever you like, that's – you just got to stay moving. Yeah. You know, there's no perfect workout or training regimen. It's just whatever will keep you active. Just motion is lotion. Something. Yeah.
You know, John, something else Brandon told us, which, I mean, this really stuck in my mind here, is that he told us that you snap blind. You know, I was really surprised to hear that, because most long snappers, I thought at least, you know, would want to, you know, when they get over the ball, they want to see their target and deliver to their target, but not you apparently. Now, how did you develop that technique? Is that a common practice for long snappers?
It's not. It's definitely the minority. If you look at all the guys that snap in the NFL, the majority, they look when they snap. It was just I was more comfortable. I felt like I could get more velocity on the ball because I could sit down, you know, kind of lock into my hips and my legs a little more. And then on top of that, I like being able to see the defense, you know, whatever the scheme they were going to run, whatever, you know, the rush that they were trying to bring. There's a lot of movement and a lot of motion, and snappers who are looking down, you got to rely on the guards and the tackles next to you to communicate what the look is and what the look's doing and where you got to block. But I was just more comfortable. One, I feel like I could get more velocity on it. And two, I liked being able to see live, like, what was going on, how the rush was coming. And it's just one of those things. If you practice it enough, you know, if you rep it enough, you create that muscle memory and just trust, you know, all that training.
And John, you know, I know that also that when I was playing, which is way before you, obviously, because I'm an old man, at some point the long snappers weren't protected.
No.
Were they always protected when you were?
No, it was slow. It was like my first couple of years, there was no protections at all. And then they started implementing, you know, you can't line up directly on his head, you know, so they'd have to move you outside the shade. And they slowly just, it got more and more. And then they started calling it more, and there's definitely now they're really looking out, you know, for player safety. And so snappers got a lot of protection now, like the quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, they need it too. And I think that lends to where some of these guys don't have to be, you know, D linemen to play or big tight ends to play long snapper, because they have that protection, right?
Yeah. No, they could line up right on the top of your neck with your, you know, your head down if you're looking. That was another reason probably why I ended up being a no look guy.
I was gonna ask you that.
So you can see, so you can get your head up and protect yourself. Some guy teeing off in the back of your neck as soon as the ball moves.
Mm. Do you think that as those rules started to evolve, that also helped contribute to your longevity, John? That if you had played earlier, obviously you took great care of yourself, all the things we just talked about. But if those rules hadn't changed and, you know, the position was even more physically demanding than it was, do you think that maybe 14 years wouldn't have been?
For sure. Like just another variable you just brought up, that, you know, things you can't control that come into play and in my success, the things that are out of my hands, you know, I just got lucky.
Yeah. Well,
it's more than luck, bro. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty prepared and talented.
And good and in shape and all that other good stuff, man.
All that stuff. Now, the blind snap is fascinating. When Brandon told us that, I was kind of blown away. And especially not only that you did it, but that you're a 2-time Pro Bowl guy. The consistency of the snap, the accuracy, all of those things. But there was a moment between the two of you that didn't go quite as planned. And it was, he knows where I'm going with it.
So oh, December 15th. I knew you were talking to Brandon. You told me you were calling Jay. You guys were going to talk to Jay Feely and wondered if I had anything on him. And I was like, oh, if he talks to Brandon, I know this is coming up.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So, well, I had enough calling him back. And so, yes, December 15th. The funny thing is he knew the date.
The date and everything. Like December,
apparently it was 2 days after his daughter was born or what have you. So he knew the date. We're hosting the Patriots here in South Florida. I think it was Sun Life at the time, but what is now Hard Rock Stadium. It's a 3-0 game. We're in the second quarter, 4th-and-1 from the 24-yard line. And here go two guys, Deuce, that have done this 1,000 times with this like almost perfect operation. And so we just expect it, right? As fans, as observers of the game, we've seen this happen a million times. One thing we don't ever worry about is John Denny not getting that ball back to Brandon Fields, whatever that might look like, or Brandon dropping one. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And that ball fires off. It hits off his face mask. He looks surprised, the whole thing. We did get Brandon's perspective from this, but I want to hear from you what the real story was.
Well, it was a fake. We were running a fake. And so it was the timing and the cadence that threw the whole thing off. And, you know, I can tell you it happened one way and he'll tell you it happened another way. And I really believe it happened my way. And I know he believes it happened his way. And I'm not going to argue against him. But yeah. For me and my, you know, I feel like the cadence from the way we practiced it, something was off. Like when he looked, when he gives me his hand and he goes back to Dan Carpenter, when he gave me his hand and the cadence with the set call, and it could have been, I'm just so wired to that set call every time, you know, you snap 1,000 balls with him and it's the same thing over and over and over. So like I mentioned before, that muscle memory. So it could have been, you know, it could have just been my brain firing off on muscle.
John, are you confessing right now?
I'm just saying, I'm just being honest. I could have swore he went back to Dan an extra time to make sure Dan was ready. Or was it? I'm pretty sure it was Dan.
It was Caleb.
It was Caleb Starr. Yeah, it wasn't. Yep. Well, that's right. It was Caleb Sturgis. So he gave me the set and went back to double check, and my ball was already coming out. And so he turned back and smacked him right in the face. And
great accuracy. I mean, I almost jammed the thing right there in his face mask.
But I mean, he's got his own brewery now. He's making money off of it.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. So I love that. So he says he's got a snap to the face beer, which is he sent us. I'll have to. I'm sure you've seen it.
I'm not getting any royalties from this though. I don't know what's going on with that.
That's fine. Right. If he's saying that's a good point, John. If he's saying that it was on you, right, and you're a contributor to this, you should have an investment in that. That beer, I absolutely love it. But so Juice, what he told, it was a fake. That is consistent. Everything right. You just said was consistent with what Brandon said. He just, in his mind, was pretty clear as to who was responsible for this thing. But it was going to be one of those where he throws it over his shoulder, where Sturgis kind of, instead of running the kick, it runs around and he does the little over the shoulder toss. Juice, it would have been sweet. 4th and 1. I would have loved to have seen it.
I've clearly tried to forget this whole thing. I couldn't even remember who the kicker was.
You're in the fish tank, baby. We don't forget anything. He gave me all the details, John. He was like, red is a fake, or the fake is off. Green, the fake is on. And he said, well, we'll leave it at that. I think you were a good man here. Oh, man.
That's
too funny.
Good. That's too good. You know, John, we just saw each other, you know, a couple of weeks ago during the alumni weekend. You know, we were celebrating our main man, Zach Thomas, and his Hall of Fame ring ceremony. And, you know, when you go to an event like that, do you ever think about, like, all the different guys you played with, you know, over the course of the 14 years, from, like, Zach to JT, Wes Walker and Sam Madison, who are both coaches now on the team, and Ricky Williams and Ronnie, talked a little bit about them, Ryan Tannehill, Cam Wake, and even guys who are still on the team, like X, you know, Xavier Howard and Jerome Baker. I mean, it's really remarkable how many players in Miami Dolphins history you play with and how many different eras of Miami Dolphins football you were a part of. I mean, I had a couple. I mean, you had multiple. What do you think about all that, you know, now a few years after you've been into retirement? How do you feel about all that went on in your 14-year career here?
No, it's still kind of surreal. I mean, at the time while I'm playing, I always felt like that rookie in my first year, just starstruck, you know, walking in the locker room my first week and looking at all the name plaques on top of the lockers, you know, Junior Seau is the Zach Thomas, Jason Taylor, and just being like, this is really their locker. Like, they're going to be in here in a couple weeks when the whole team meets together. And so that whole time, my mindset was very, I don't know, ignorant or young. And so I always felt like the little brother throughout my whole career. And I always kind of like, I was just lucky to be there. Like, I was kind of like riding around on everyone else's coattails and just having a first row seat to this whole thing, watching, you know, Hall of Fame talent take place. So it's crazy to kind of step outside of that and be like, you know, I was there with them. I was with a lot of, you know, I was able to rub elbows with a lot of great talent.
Yeah, honestly, you got a chance to be at more Hall of Fame ceremonies with some of these guys you play with. I mean, there's a chance that some of these guys might make it eventually, man. And to be a part of all that, man, that's a testament to your longevity, being a great teammate with those guys too, man. But that had to be a lot of fun to be able to sit back and say, yo, I played with that guy. That's pretty cool stuff.
No, it is fun. It's childhood dream for sure.
So, you know, it's, and I'm going off script here, and we're going to wrap this thing up in a second, John, because you probably have another workout scheduled or what have you. But I'm going off script a little bit. But as you, and I didn't think about this, I don't know why I didn't, but again, going back to that first ever game in Canton, Hall of Fame game. And then you mentioned when JT went in 2017, obviously you were still playing. Mm-hmm. Dolphins were in camp, but they flew a plane up just like they did for Zach, but they flew but the difference here was there were still guys on the roster that JT had played with. And you were on that plane. It was you. It was Cam Wake. I think it was Mike Pouncey.
Yeah.
And then like Joey and Charlie and Charlie Troy.
Troy.
And you like, what was that like for you to have that arc in your career? To be the rookie when Dan Marino's going in, to now going in to see your teammate while you're still playing and to have that experience?
Nah, it all happens like so fast. Like I mentioned, just my whole career, I just felt like the young guy. But to be able to be, you know, a link between those two Hall of Fame careers. No, it was definitely an experience.
Yeah, that was cool. I know it meant a lot to JT too. I think he was really, anybody who showed up, it was a big deal to him. But, you know, to have guys that he played with that were still playing, I know it meant a lot that the Dolphins did that.
Oh yeah, hats off to our owner, you know, being able to put us, you know, like you said, it was in the middle of training camp. So for us to be able to hop on a plane and get out there and make that happen and, you know, allowing us to be able to participate in a memory with JT was awesome.
Well, you talk about it all happened so quickly, and we're going to talk about the quickest moment in a football game is the 2-minute drill. John, we know that throughout your 14-year career, there were countless times where you essentially were part of the conclusion of a good 2-minute drill where you guys run out there to get the winning kick.
Oh, yeah.
Deliver that perfect snap almost every time, as we just talked about there. But this is going to be your toughest 2-minute experience ever. I don't know if you started listening to some of the old episodes. God, I love that he pulled tapes on you, Juice. In fact,
oh man,
that's one of my favorite moments in all of our podcasts.
Wait, no, it wasn't necessarily on it. Juice. It was just I was curious to hear what some of the guys I played with had talked about.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. But and please do keep listening. I love that. That's been one of the most fun things for us is when guys hear what other guys have said. And obviously, we love anybody who listens to the podcast, but the guys who are a part of it to hear what other people and tell these stories are awesome. But we now do this 2-minute drill. We've done it for a couple of years now. And so what we're going to do is we're putting 2 minutes up here on a kind of a proverbial clock, and we're going to fire off some quick questions and see what kind of quick responses you have, and then we'll get you out of here.
Shoot.
All right, ready, John?
Ready.
All right, here we go. I was a Cub Scout as a kid, but you were not only a Boy Scout, you actually achieved the elite rank of Eagle Scout. Mm-hmm. Does John Denny still know the Boy Scout's oath?
Oh, man.
The on my honor.
Do my best to do my duty to God and my country and obey the Scout law. To keep clean, mentally
to help other people at all times.
To help other people at all times, to stay mentally awake and morally straight and physically clean and something like that. Why don't you pick?
That's good enough, man. Right there. That's I'm damn impressed.
Good, why don't you pick? Damn good, pick man. The other one. It's easier. It's just, be prepared is the Scout motto.
Well, that's why we didn't pick it. That's exactly why. All right, clock is running. That was pretty good, though. That sounds like it's a John good. Denny oath. You're still living that oath. Okay, you learned to play the violin at age 5. Do you still play the violin? And if so, what's your favorite song?
I do play intermittently. As you know, ironically, just got invited to play for a Christmas thing at the church next month. So it usually takes a wedding or a church hymn or something to get me out, and maybe, you know, 2 or 3 times a year.
And what's your go-to song?
Oh, there's whatever, you know, it's Christmas music this time, but I don't have a go-to.
All right. You played for 7 different head coaches during your record 224 consecutive games. Nick Saban, Cam Cameron, Tony Sperano, may you rest in peace, Todd Bowles, Joe Philbin, Dan Campbell, and Adam Gase. If one of them could be cast as John Denny in a movie about your life, who would it be?
I'll go with Adam Gase, just because we were the same age.
There it is. Okay. We like that it. Worked. That's a good that choice.
And I'm glad, right. I'm glad you didn't question. Have me rip off all those names off the top of my head.
We're tough. We're not that tough. Okay. But here's another one for you. All right. Jay Feely, and you heard it. He just told us that if he had to trust any non-kicker to make a game-winning kick, you would be the guy. He picked it. He didn't even think twice about it, and maybe it was because of a 2-minute situation. He chose you. We're going to build upon that. So if you're called to make that kick, and now you need somebody else, one of your former teammates, to step up and be the long snapper because you're now not available, who could deliver the ball exactly the way that you need it?
It was JT. JT was our backup snapper.
There he is. The Hall of Famer steps in for John Denny, and he gets the perfect snap. John's going to hit it there. That's the 2-minute drill for the fish tank. John, you're a good sport, man.
That's so good, John, man.
No, thank
you. That's so good, man. Thank you so much, man. That was so much fun.
You guys are more than welcome. Glad I come on. You know what? Jay Feely wasn't far off. I was the backup kicker at BYU, so...
Look at that. Did he know that? Did he have some intel?
No, I don't think he knew that. I don't think anybody knows that, but it was...
But wait a second.
So were you ever backup kicker, though, for the Dolphins, John?
No, I mean, Riz knew I could kick a ball, but there was never a situation that I'd have to do that, but it was...
Right.
I know, Seth, you're going to add... Seth is puzzled at how I could backup kick if someone's got to snap it. Is that what
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
No, it's so you got a backup kicker, you got a backup snapper. So there would be someone who could get snap so that I could kick it.
Right. And but what's the order of operations?
The chances of that being a good operation is slim.
Right. That's what I want. So, like, if you're the snapper, and so they have to make a decision, like, is there a backup kicker? But I guess they'll sacrifice and go to the backup snapper because they have to have somebody to line up there and kick.
Yeah, this is a desperate situation where it's like, you know, no time left on the clock. It's you just need the extra point. I mean, something right.
just get us through the game.
Yeah, there's no risk. You know, it's.
Yeah, well, we're used to desperate situations here in the fish tank, so that's why I'm so intrigued by
that's so good.
I just took
John Denny, you are the man.
Yeah, thanks. I just went sideways there a little bit. So you're trying to wrap up the podcast. And
I love it.
Oh, good, man. That was so good, man. That was so. Thanks for diving in, John. Oh,
appreciate it, guys. Thanks again.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Just like Drew said, thanks for diving into the fish tank presented by iHeartRadio. Be sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you're using. And don't be afraid to rate the show or leave us a comment. We love your feedback. And remember, you can find us as well as Drive Time with Travis Wingfield and all of our international partners on MiamiDolphins.com.